Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Friday, July 17th, and The Odyssey was released today. I'm going to name a few books, and I want you to tell me why you know them or how you know them, okay? Let's start. The Great Gatsby, To Kill a Mockingbird, Romeo and Juliet, Lord of the Flies, Of Mice and Men, Huckleberry Finn, 1984, and The Odyssey. Oh, let's throw another one in there too. How about The Catcher in the Rye? Okay, so I know my audience spans different listening age ranges, but I'm going to guess that you've read these in high school. And if I asked your parents, assuming they went to high school in America, they probably also read the same ones, which raises a question that I never thought to ask until this week, which is why? There's no national curriculum in the United States. Nobody in Washington mandated that every American teenager reads The Great Gatsby. Each of the roughly 13,000 school districts in the country technically choose their own reading lists. And yet, somehow, nearly all of them end up choosing the same 12 books. And that list really hasn't changed much since the 1960s. So who's actually making these decisions? The answer involves college entrance exams from over 100 years ago, two states with outsized political influence, parents who want their kids to read what they read, and a self-reinforcing loop that works almost exactly the way that the QWERTY keyboard did. If you want to learn more about the QWERTY keyboard, go back and listen to that Higher IQ episode. Okay, so let's get into how all of this happened. The high school reading list didn't start in a classroom. It actually started in a college admissions office. In the early 1900s, college set entrance exam requirements that included specific literary works. If Harvard expected incoming students to have read Shakespeare, then high school students taught Shakespeare. If Yale referenced The Odyssey in its admissions criteria, high schools assigned The Odyssey. The reading lists were actually reverse engineered from what the top colleges wanted. And since the most prestigious colleges tended to value the same works, a loose consensus formed across American high schools about which books a well-educated student should know. The consensus hardened over the next several decades as standardized testing took hold. When the College Board created the Advanced Placement English Literature Exam, the test questions referenced specific texts. When the SAT included reading comprehension passages, the passages reflected certain literary traditions. Teachers who wanted their students to perform well on these exams taught those texts that the exams were going to be built around. So these must-read classics weren't decided by a committee of literary scholars evaluating the best books ever written. It was actually shaped by the practical need of test preparation in college admissions, which is a much less romantic origin story. By the time education historian Arthur Appleby surveyed high school reading lists in 1989, the canon, which also is known as must-read books, was remarkably stable and remarkably narrow. The top 10 most assigned books included 9 works by white male authors and 1 by a white woman, Harper Lee. 0 books by minority authors were in the top 10. Shakespeare dominated, with Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, Hamlet, and Julius Caesar all appearing near the top. I read all of those, and I'm sure you did too. Then The Great Gatsby, which was published in 1925. That's been a fixture for decades, despite modest sales when it was first released. Gatsby became a classroom staple not because it was a bestseller, but because it was short, thematically rich, and set during a period of American history that teachers found useful for discussion. Those are the practical classroom qualities, not literary rankings. Even without a national curriculum, American schools end up teaching similar content because of how textbooks get made and sold. 19 states adopt textbooks at the state level, meaning that a state board of education reviews and approves a list of acceptable textbooks, and every school in the state must choose from that list. The rest leave the decision to individual districts. But the states that adopt at a state level include some of the biggest student populations in the country, and that concentration of buying power shapes what publishers produce. Texas has historically been the most influential. The Texas State Board of Education reviews textbooks on a regular cycle, and its decisions affect roughly 5 million students. 5 million. Because producing different editions for different states is expensive, publishers have historically designed their core textbooks to meet Texas standards first, and then sold the same books nationally with minimal changes. A decision made by 15 elected board members in Austin about what belongs in a textbook ends up in classrooms in Oregon, Minnesota, and Vermont. California exerts similar influence from the other direction, with different political priorities. The result is that publishers try to satisfy both states simultaneously, which often produces textbooks that are compromised documents, which means that they're broad enough to pass review in Texas, but inclusive enough to pass review in California, and specific enough to satisfy neither completely. Florida has recently joined this dynamic, rejecting 41% of submitted math textbooks in one cycle for what it described as prohibited content. The reading list follows the same pattern. When a major state's curriculum framework references specific novels, those novels get taught in states that never made the choice independently. The Odyssey isn't assigned in most American high schools because each of those 13,000 districts independently concluded it was the best use of their students' time. It's assigned because it's been on the list long enough that testing frameworks reference it, textbook publishers include study materials for it, and the infrastructure of American education is built around the assumption that students will encounter it. So now let's talk about this loop. The reason that the reading list hasn't changed much in over 60 years is the same reason that we use the QWERTY keyboard: path dependency, reinforced by multiple interlocking systems that are each individually rational, but collectively resistant to change. Let's take a quick first principles look at this. Teachers tend to teach books that they know well. That makes sense, right? And the books that they know well are usually the books that they were taught in schools themselves. A teacher who read The Great Gatsby in high school studied it again in college, and already has 10 years of lesson plans built around it. Why on earth would they swap that book out for a novel published last year, even if the newer book is better for their students? I mean, think about that. The switching cost for them is just way too high, and it's a lot easier to teach something that you already know. I mean, I think most of us know that, right? New lesson plans, new discussion questions, new essay prompts, new context to research. The existing curriculum just works. Changing it is expensive, and it's a lot of time and effort. Parents, interestingly enough, reinforce the cycle from the other direction. When a school proposes adding new books or removing older ones, parents who remember reading those books in their own education tend to resist the change. There's a comfort in knowing that your child is reading the same things that you read, a sense that the education is legitimate because it matches your own experience. Education historian Juana Perillo observed that parents tend to approve of having their children study the same books that they once did. It creates a generational feedback loop where the canon, or set of required reading materials, perpetuates itself through parental expectations. And the testing infrastructure locks it in from a third angle. As long as the AP exam, the SAT, and the college admissions framework reference certain literary traditions, teachers have a practical incentive to teach those traditions regardless of whether they personally think other books would be more valuable. The result is a reading list that was shaped by college admissions requirements from a century ago, reinforced by parents who want their children to read what they read, locked in by standardized testing, and distributed nationally through a textbook market dominated by a handful of large states. It's not that the books on the list are bad, trust me, like I actually liked a lot of them. My boy Atticus Finch and To Kill a Mockingbird, even Leo's remake of The Great Gatsby I thought was pretty good, and it's always fun to see the movies after you've read the book. I know a lot of my friends are readers, but I mean, ask yourself, how many times have you watched a movie that you've read the book first? My guess is probably not very many, but The Odyssey could probably be one of them, because you were forced to read it in high school. The thing for me is that it's the process that put them there and keeps them there that has nothing to do with whether or not they're the best available options for students today. That's the piece that just doesn't sit right with me. But look, I know that systems are hard to change. The list persists because the system that produced it is self-reinforcing, and changing any one part of that system requires changing all of the others simultaneously, which is why nobody does it. So again, if you go to see The Odyssey this weekend, and you read it in high school, here's what you should remember. There's no national curriculum in the United States, but nearly every American high school assigns the same 12 or so books, and that list hasn't changed since the 1960s. The canon was originally shaped by college entrance requirements, reinforced by standardized testing, distributed nationally through a textbook market where Texas, California, and Florida have outsized influence, and then perpetuated by parents who want their children to read what they read. In the late 1980s, the top 10 most assigned books included 9 by white male authors and 1 by a white woman. The list persists not because someone evaluated every book ever written and chose the best ones. It was because the system that put these books in classrooms is self-reinforcing in the same way that the QWERTY keyboard is. Teachers teach what they know, tests test what's taught, and then parents approve of what's familiar. And nobody can change one piece without changing all the others. The Great Gatsby has been assigned in American high schools for over 60 years. It sold quite poorly when it was first published, but it became a classic because the system made it one. I really am curious how many more of these books that Hollywood is just going to turn into movies, because it is a brilliant marketing strategy that, like, everybody knows of these books. Just make a movie. I mean, you could have to market it like every other movie, but you've already got a head start because, like I said, most people read these books. So stay informed, stay curious, maybe read a book that's not on that list, and we'll see you tomorrow.